You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. I'm Rachel Martin. Good morning. This morning, House Democrats are expected to lay out articles of impeachment against President Donald J. Trump. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the chairs of the committees investigating the president will hold a news conference shortly. We will broadcast that live when they come to the podium. They are expected to explain which articles of impeachment they will pursue. NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson and White House correspondent Ayesha Roscoe are with us in studio this morning. We also have NPR's Kelsey Snell joining us on the line from Capitol Hill. Welcome to you all. Kelsey, I'm going to start with you. You've been talking to your sources on the Hill. What have you been able to glean about what the substance of the articles will be?
What we are expecting to hear is that there will be two articles of impeachment. And from what I'm hearing, it looks like they have they've settled on abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Now, what the details are of the additional charges within those articles has yet to be revealed. I think it's really important to look at what that will include, though, because that'll tell us a little bit about who they expect to vote for these different articles. The articles themselves are kind of an overarching umbrella, and they can contain a bunch of additional charges, and they can also contain the additional evidence. So we could see parts of the Ukraine investigation in one, but as some members were telling us, even as early as last week, there was pressure to try to put a pattern of behavior and establish that by discussing things that were put in the Mueller report. So we'll be eager to see how they establish their case for the two charges that they are going to put forward today.
But Mara, wasn't there a risk of including the Mueller report in this? Like people out there saying, if you make this too broad, if you go back to the Mueller report, then that's going to make it harder to sell.
One of the debates that Democrats have been having among themselves is whether that's a good idea or not. And it's kind of a double-edged sword. There are Democrats who felt that he should be impeached for the obstruction that he committed that Mueller put in his report. On the other hand, one of the political weaknesses for Democrats is that they have been talking about impeaching the president for a long time over many things, and that's one of the arguments that the Republicans are making, that you would have impeached him no matter what. You've been talking about impeachment ever since some of you got to Congress. You know, they've been playing the Rashida Tlaib cut over and over again, impeach the blank,
but
blank,
both
blank.
Things can be true.
Yes, both things can
be
true.
There can be Democrats who wanted him out from the beginning, and he could have violated
his
office.
And but that's what makes it hard, because you— impeachment, as we say over and over again here at NPR, is a political process. You want to make a political argument that can convince the largest number of people. And Democrats have to figure out what's right. You know, how do you make sure he's not above the law? But also, how do you convince the largest number of people that what you're doing is the right thing?
I mean, Ayesha, so we're talking about potentially an article of impeachment about abuse of power and also obstruction of Congress. The White House, I mean, this originates in the fact that the White House has refused to hand over documents and key witnesses, correct?
Yeah, I mean, they have taken this position, especially, you know, since the Democrats took over the House, that they don't have to cooperate. And they continue that with this impeachment inquiry. They told officials not to testify. Some of the career people did go against them and went ahead and did that. But they have kept documents, and they have just the White House has taken this position that they don't have to comply with what Congress is asking. And there was this question in some of the arguments that the Republicans were making was that the Congress should have done more to try to force people to testify. That they should have done more and to kind of force the issue. I think Democrats were looking at it and saying that it would just drag out, and that's what they didn't want to happen, right? Because that's what happened with the Mueller inquiry.
It's kind of like the White House created a situation that allowed Republicans to say, hey, you're not getting testimony from people with firsthand knowledge. All this is hearsay. How can we impeach someone in hearsay? Well, the White House has refused to allow people who had direct contact with the president testify. Although one of the strongest arguments I think that Republicans are making is that the Democrats could have pursued two tracks at once. They didn't have to wait till the courts resolved this. But why didn't they have the courage of their own convictions to actually issue a subpoena to John Bolton, which they did not do? Why did they pull back the subpoena from John Bolton's former deputy, which they did? So they haven't, you know, they haven't tried to get that testimony with every possible tool that they had. at the same time, they don't want to wait. They don't want to delay the process. They could do both of those things at the same time.
This was the argument that that constitutional law expert Jonathan Turley had been making when he testified before the House Judiciary Committee, right? He was a witness that Republicans had called, and he said, listen, Democrats, you will strengthen your argument if you let the courts play out on these contested subpoenas. That somehow he was arguing that unless Congress let that play,
or at least
take
go to court. Or you don't have to wait for them to decide, but at least go to court.
Then Congress was going to be the ones abusing their power, not the president, which was something that Republicans seized on. I mean, I want to play a clip from an interview we did earlier this morning with a Democratic member of the House Judiciary Committee, Congresswoman Jaya Paul of Washington State, because this isn't, as Democrats see it, the obstruction charge in particular, is not about a tit for tat. You're not releasing the documents you should. She sees the stakes as far higher. Let's listen to this clip.
That obstruction of Congress essentially means that we no longer have a democracy. We no longer have those checks and balances that the framers were so intent on providing, so that no one individual or one body, in this case, since we have three, would ever be unchecked in its power.
Kelsey, what do you make of that? Is that something that you're hearing from other members?
Yeah, that's absolutely one of the part of the big discussion here. I should say that we are seeing the chairs approaching right now. We have Jerry Nadler is approaching the dais with the other chairs of the committees who have participated in the investigation, and Speaker Pelosi is with them as well.
Speaker Pelosi approaching as well, as Kelsey says, with the committee chairs. You're listening to Special Coverage. The committee chairs, congressional leadership in the Democrat caucus will soon announce the articles of impeachment. We've known that this step is coming, and now Nancy Pelosi presumably will announce what is in those articles. You're listening to NPR Special Coverage. We're just awaiting Nancy Pelosi as she...
Order of business.
Here we go.
For members of Congress is the solemn act to take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. With great respect and gratitude that I thank the chairs of the committees, the six committees who have been working to help us honor our oath of office. I also want to thank the staff of those committees and the committee members for all of their work over this period of time to help us protect and defend. I want to thank the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Mr. Nadler, chair of the Intelligence Committee, Mr. Schiff, chair of the Ways and Means Committee, Chairman Richie Neal of Massachusetts, the chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee, Elliot Engel of New York, the chair of the Financial Services Committee, Maxine Waters of California, the chair of the Committee on Government Reform and Oversight, Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney. I also want to acknowledge the important work that was done by our dear and departed, may rest in peace, Elijah Cummings, as chair of the Oversight Committee. Now please to yield to the distinguished chair of the Judiciary Committee, Mr. Nadler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Over the last several months, the investigative committees of the House have been engaged in an impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump's efforts to solicit foreign interference in the 2020 elections, efforts that compromised our national security and threatened the integrity of our elections. Throughout this inquiry, he has attempted to conceal the evidence from Congress and from the American people. Our president holds the ultimate public trust. When he betrays that trust and puts himself before country, he endangers the Constitution, he endangers our democracy, and he endangers our national security. The framers of the Constitution prescribed a clear remedy for presidents who so violate their oath of office. That is the power of impeachment. Today, in service to our duty to the Constitution and to our country, the House Committee on the Judiciary is introducing two articles of impeachment charging the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, with committing high crimes and misdemeanors. The first article is for abuse of power. It is an impeachable offense for the president to exercise the powers of his public office to obtain an improper personal benefit while ignoring or injuring the national interest. That is exactly what President Trump did when he solicited and pressured Ukraine to interfere in our 2020 presidential election, thus damaging our national security, undermining the integrity of the next election, and violating his oath to the American people. These actions, moreover, are consistent with President Trump's previous invitations of foreign interference in our 2016 presidential election. And when he was caught, when the House investigated and opened an impeachment inquiry, President Trump engaged in unprecedented, categorical, and indiscriminate defiance of the impeachment inquiry. This gives rise to the second article of impeachment for obstruction of Congress. Here, too, we see a familiar pattern in President Trump's misconduct. A president who declares himself above accountability, above the American people, and above Congress's power of impeachment, which is meant to protect against threats to our democratic institutions, is a president who sees himself as above the law. We must be clear, no one, not even the president, is above the law. I want to recognize the great contributions of the investigative chairs, particularly Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff, Foreign Affairs Chairman Elliot Engel, Committee on Oversight and Reform's former chairman, the late Elijah Cummings, and its new chairwoman, Carolyn Maloney, Financial Services Chairwoman Maxine Waters, and Ways and Means Chairman Richard Neal, who helped lay the foundation for the articles we are introducing today. I also want to thank my Judiciary Committee colleagues who were critical in our work to hold the president accountable and in the drafting of these articles. Later this week, the Judiciary Committee will meet to consider these articles of impeachment and to make a recommendation to the full House of Representatives. We do not take this action lightly, but we have taken an oath to defend the Constitution. And unlike President Trump, we understand that our duty first and foremost is to protect the Constitution and to protect the interests of the American people. That is why we must take this solemn step today. Elections are the cornerstone of democracy and are foundational to the rule of law. But the integrity of our next election is at risk from a president who has already sought foreign interference in the 2016 and 2020 elections and who consistently puts himself above country. That is why we must act now. I want to turn now to Chairman Schiff, who will explain the evidence that supports these articles and the need for us to act with such urgency today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Madam Speaker, and to my colleagues, good morning. The framers of the Constitution recognized that someday a president might come to office who would abuse that office, betray the public trust, and undermine national security to secure foreign help in his reelection, and who would seek to abrogate the power of Congress to hold him accountable. They recognized this danger and they prescribed a remedy, and that remedy is impeachment. It is an extraordinary remedy and one that I've been reluctant to recommend until the actions of President Trump gave Congress no alternative. We stand here today because the president's continuing abuse of his power has left us no choice. To do nothing would make ourselves complicit in the president's abuse of his high office, the public trust, and our national security. The president's misconduct is as simple and as terrible as this. President Trump solicited a foreign nation, Ukraine, to publicly announce investigations into his opponent and a baseless conspiracy theory promoted by Russia to help his reelection campaign. President Trump abused the power of his office by conditioning two official acts to get Ukraine to help his reelection: the release of hundreds of millions of dollars in military aid that nation desperately needed, and a White House meeting with an ally trying to fend off Russian aggression. In so doing, he undermined our national security and jeopardized the integrity of our next election. And he does so still. The evidence of the president's misconduct is overwhelming and uncontested. And how could it not be when the president's own words on July 25th, "I would like you to do us a favor, though," lays so bare his intentions, his willingness to sacrifice the national security for his own personal interests. And when the president got caught, he committed his second impeachable act, obstruction of Congress, of the very ability to make sure that no one is above the law, not even the president of the United States. The evidence is every bit as strong that President Trump has obstructed Congress fully, without precedent, and without basis in law. If allowed to stand, it would decimate Congress's ability to conduct oversight of this president or any other in the future, leaving this president and those who follow to be free to be as corrupt, malfeasant, or incompetent as they would like, with no prospect of discovery or accountability. Now, some would argue, why don't you just wait? Why don't you just wait until you get these witnesses the White House refuses to produce? Why don't you just wait until you get the documents the White House refuses to turn over? And people should understand what that argument really means. It has taken us 8 months to get a lower court ruling that Don McGahn has no absolute right to defy Congress. 8 months for one court decision. If it takes us another 8 months to get a second court or maybe a Supreme Court decision, people need to understand that is not the end of the process. It comes back to us and we ask questions because he no longer has absolute immunity, and then he claims something else, that his answers are privileged and we have to go to back to court for another 8 or 16 months. The argument, why don't you just wait, amounts to this. Why don't you just let him cheat in one more election? Why not let him cheat just one more time? Why not let him have foreign help just one more time? That is what that argument amounts to. The president's misconduct goes to the heart of whether we can conduct a free and fair election in 2020. It is bad enough for a candidate to invite foreign interference in our political process, but it is far more corrosive for a president to do so and to abuse his power to make it so. Despite everything we have uncovered, the president's misconduct continues to this day, unapologetically and right now. As we saw when he stood on the White House lawn and he was asked, what did you want in that July 25th call? And he said the answer was a simple one. And not just a simple one on July 25th, but a simple one today, and that is he still wants Ukraine to interfere in our election to help his campaign. Even this week, the president's lawyer was back in Ukraine seeking to revive the same debunked conspiracy theory promoted at the president's behest, which gets to the final and most pernicious of the arguments that we have heard in the president's defense, that the president can do whatever he wants under Article 2, including get foreigners involved in our elections, and we should just, to quote the president's chief of staff, get over it. Ben Franklin said, we have a republic if we can keep it. The president and his men say, you can't keep it, and Americans should just get over it. Americans don't get to decide American elections anymore, not by themselves, not without foreign help. For the members of Congress, this is not a question of fact because the facts are not seriously contested. It is rather a question of duty. The president's oath of office appears to mean very little to him, but the articles put forward today will give us a chance to show that we will defend the Constitution and that our oath means something to us. I thank you, Mr. Chairman.